I'm so depressed. Oh, look, a jukebox.
Mike, I think you're swell.
Really?
I appreciate you.
Oh, do I got another quarter?
Good friend, Mike.
Well, golly, I feel better already. Waitress, you have change for a dollar?
Why don't you make that $2? I need a little extra help today. A pat on the back and some genuine interest, and let me underline the word genuine interest and concern, really translates into encouragement, and we all thrive on that. This is Focus on the Family, and today one of the most successful businessmen in the world will point out the validity of honoring God with our words and treating everyone else as if they're valuable and worthy of respect. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. I'm Mike Trout. Welcome to another edition of our Focus on the Family broadcast. Actually, today we're going to hear from a couple of gifted communicators. One has put his thoughts down in writing, and we'll talk about that person in a moment. The other has spoken before a group, and we have a tape of that presentation that we're going to play. They both have very positive perspectives on life. Doctor?
Mike, people are going to enjoy this program, I'm sure. The person that we're going to hear from first is Rich DeVos. He's the co-founder of the Amway International Organization, which he started with Jay Van Andel back in 1959, I believe.
My goodness.
And it's spread around the world at this time. Many of our listeners may know that Rich DeVos has been ill. He suffered a stroke in June of 1992. He recovered from that beautifully, only to have a heart attack and then triple bypass surgery 6 months later. Then on December 21st, 1992, Rich announced his retirement as the president of Amway, a position that's now held by his son, Dick DeVos. Dick and his wife, Betsy, are very good friends to Shirley and me. Rich DeVos is also chairman of Gospel Films. They've produced wonderful films over the years. He's written a number of books, including one called Compassionate Capitalism, People Helping People Help Themselves. That's really sort of the theme of what we're going to hear Rich DeVos talk about on Focus on the Family today. He's talking about being an encourager. This is basic stuff, Mike, but it's fun. It's a fun tape to listen to. It's only about 16 minutes long, and then we're going to do something else for the second half of the program. Rich and his wife Helen live in Florida now, and being a basketball fan, Mike, especially an NBA fan, this is important to me. He is the owner of the Orlando Magic NBA franchise. To leave enough time for all this, Mike, let's plunge ahead.
Rich is such a successful person, but he bases that success on some very simple principles, and that's what we're going to hear.
Now, people like to get complicated and sophisticated in all these, and I'd like to see if I just can't give you a few simple phrases. And if you got a piece of paper, just write these things down. They're very simple. They must be. I had thought of them. And I tell you why. They were given to me many years ago. I incorporated them into my dialogue, not perfectly. I use them daily. And they have changed my life. But I have found that if I want to change the lives of people, there are simple things I really do. And that's what we really have to do. People said to me, what do you do? I said, oh, I'm just a cheerleader. I go around trying to make people believe in themselves and feel better. And while it's maybe not quite that simple, there are certain phrases you might use in your human relations with people far and near, family and others, that might help you. And here's the first one. I'm wrong. I know that's a simple phrase, but it's a very difficult one. My wife still thinks I don't do it well. A while back, she had eye surgery, and she had some cataracts removed. And I said, you can go in the hospital in the morning. You can come out at night. It's a one-day deal. This is the new age. There's nothing to it. And she said, I'm going to go in the night before, and I'm going to stay the next night. And we went back and forth that was all unnecessary. And she says, that's fine. I'm going to do that. Well, I had a little nose trouble, so I decided I was going to go watch the operation. So I am chairman of the hospital board there. And so they went in. They said, yeah, you can watch. So I went in and watched the master craftsman go in and cut that eye. And reach in there and take out that lens. I watched him with his little vacuum cleaner, because when he cuts around, some pieces float in there. He vacuums all out inside the eyeball where the lens is located, and watched him stick a new one in there and sew it back up. This is quite a deal. And I suddenly, as I watched all this, understood the tension and the anxiety and the reason why she wanted to prepare herself for it. And when she got back into her room, since I had been rather strong in my views that this wasn't necessary, I said, "I'm sorry, and I'm wrong." And she said, "I didn't think I'd ever hear you say it." And as I said, for most of us, it's most difficult, but I would urge it upon you. And I combine the two phrases, "I'm wrong," and "I'm sorry." One's a matter of the mind, and the other's a matter of the heart. You can defuse more arguments, more interpersonal warfare by saying, "I'm wrong and I'm sorry," than all the persuasive arguments you can marshal. And now you can proceed. But try those two little phrases, "I'm wrong and I'm sorry." My third phrase I'd give you is, "I need you." I need you. Somebody will drive 500 miles to hear you tell them that. I recently had a garbage man who came through early in the morning, and I greeted him and thanked him for going through quietly. It was in a summer resort place, and he didn't flip the covers in the general direction of the garbage cans. He really did a beautiful job. I told him that. He said, "Listen, mister," he said, "I've been hauling garbage for 20 years. Nobody ever told me my job was important." But he and I crossed paths a few times after that, and it was a marvelous relationship. My fourth one is a thank you, and I don't have to dwell on it. You know how to do it. But to do it with sincerity and conviction will help you a lot. And there's a lot of people who need to hear a thank you. More and more and more. And I give you two more. My fifth one says, "I'm proud of you." That's very complicated. But you know, there's something you can be proud of in every person you meet, and they've never heard it. Put it in your vocabulary, and we'll begin to change this world as we develop in these. And my last one is, "I love you." As Christ has loved us. So these are all things you all know, and you know better than I. But let me end on a story. And the story is of a school teacher who was what I call a life enricher, as you and I must be. To me, the challenge of us in the next 10 years is to be life enricher. Not necessarily changing everybody's view to conform with ours, but we must enrich their lives. A fellow by the name of Disney said there were three kinds of people he encountered in the world. The first kind, he said, he found are what he called well poisoners. They're the ones who always tell you it won't work, it's no good, you'll never do it, and they always dump poison on your good idea. You're going to do this, and you're going to say, "You're too old, you're too young, you're too fat, you're too thin, you're not smart enough, you don't have the right grade point average for all you young guys, you know." I'll tell you someday about my grade point average. And it's a very important thing for you young people, because as I went through school, my grades were never very good. But out of that came a process of discovering other values. I had a school teacher who once wrote in my yearbook, "With talents for leadership in God's kingdom." And my life is still impacted by what he wrote in there 40-some years ago. One simple phrase. And when you use simple phrases to people who are desperate for a word of encouragement, they'll do almost anything you ask them after. They're so hungry for it. Number one on Disney was a well poisoners. Number two is what he called lawn mowers. Wonderful people. They cut the grass. They go up and down. They take care. They weed the garden. They do all the nice little things in their yard. But they never go outside their yard. He said, "I like those people, but they aren't the people who change the world." He said, "The people who change the world are the life enrichers, who reach beyond themselves, and they sing in the choirs, and they get politically active, and they stand up for things they believe in." He says, "Those are the ones." And that's what you and I are, and that's why we're here, isn't it? But so often we go home from here and say, "What can I do? I'm just one little guy. It's a big system. You can't beat the system." You change them one at a time. Anyway, Miss Thompson is a school teacher. And this is the way Charles Swindoll tells the story about one of her students. Teddy Stollard certainly qualified as one of the least disinterested in school. Musty, wrinkled clothes, hair never combed. One of those kids in school with a deadpan face, expressionless. Sort of a glassy, unfocused stare. When Miss Thompson spoke to Teddy, he always answered in monosyllables. Unattractive, unmotivated, and distant, he was just plain hard to like. Even though his teacher said she loved all in her class the same, down inside she wasn't being completely truthful. Whenever she marked Teddy's papers, she got a sort of perverse pleasure out of putting X's next to the wrong answers. And when she put the F's at the top of the page, she always did it with a flair. She should have known better. She had Teddy's records. And she knew more about him than she wanted to admit. The records read, first grade. Teddy shows promise with his work and attitude, but poor home situation. Second grade. Teddy could do better. Mother is seriously ill. He received little help at home. Third grade. Teddy is a good boy, but too serious. He is a slow learner. His mother died this year. Fourth grade. Teddy is very slow, but well-behaved. His father shows no interest. Well, Christmas came, and the boys and girls in Miss Thompson's class brought her Christmas presents. They piled their presents on her desk and crowded around to watch her open them. Among the presents there was one from Teddy Stollard. She was surprised that he had brought her a gift, but he had. Teddy's gift was wrapped in brown paper and held together with scotch tape. On the paper were written the simple words, "For Miss Thompson," from Teddy. When she opened Teddy's present, out fell a gaudy rhinestone bracelet with half the stones missing, and a bottle of cheap perfume. The other boys and girls began to giggle and smirk at Teddy's gifts, but Miss Thompson at least had enough sense to silence them by immediately putting on the bracelet and putting some of the perfume on her wrist. Holding her wrist up for the other children to smell, she said, "Doesn't it smell lovely?" And the children, taking their cue from the teacher, responded with oohs and ahs. At the end of the day, when school was over and the other children had left, Teddy lingered behind. He slowly came over to her desk and said softly, "Miss Thompson, Miss Thompson, you smell just like my mother. And her bracelet looks real pretty on you, too. I'm glad you like my presents." When Teddy left, Miss Thompson got down on her knees and asked God to forgive her. The next day, when the children came to school, they were welcomed by a new teacher. Miss Thompson had become a different person. She was no longer just a teacher. She was an agent of God. She was now a person committed to loving her children and doing things for them that would live on after her. She helped all the children, but especially the slow ones, and especially Teddy Stollard. By the end of that school year, Teddy showed dramatic improvement. He had caught up with most of the students and was even ahead of some. Well, the year ended, and she didn't hear from Teddy for a long time. Then one day she received a note that read, "Dear Miss Thompson, I wanted you to be the first to know. I will be graduating second in my class. Love, Teddy Stollard." And 4 years later, another note. "Dear Miss Thompson, they just told me I'll be graduating first in my class. I wanted you to be the first to know. The university has not been easy, but I liked it. Love, Teddy Stollard." And 4 years later, another note. "Dear Miss Thompson, as of today, I am Theodore Stollard, MD. How about that? I wanted you to be the first to know. I'm getting married next month, the 27th to be exact. I want you to come and sit where my mother would sit if she were alive. You are the only family I have now. Dad died last year. Love, Teddy Stollard." Well, Miss Thompson went to that wedding and sat where Teddy's mother would have sat. She deserved to sit there. She had done something for Teddy, that he could never forget. And I share that story with you because you are all Miss Thompsons. You are all changing lives every day, mostly for good. But I think if you and I, taking on with what Ollie talked about, and continue to really work to make people realize their own potential greatness and that God loves them, then this movement will not only grow, but it will grow because it ought to grow, because we're making people better people. And then all the rest works out all by itself. Thank you, everybody.
And that was a portion of a message that Dr. Dobson and I heard at a recent meeting. We've been listening to Rich DeVos, one of the founders of the Amway Corporation, and you can sure understand why so many people who work for that man love him.
Mm-hmm. Mike, some of the greatest ideas that have ever occurred to mankind are the simplest of ideas. We heard some simple ideas today, and yet I think the antecedents for those concepts that Rich DeVos was talking about actually can be found in Scripture, because they originated in the heart of God. He is love. God is love. And he is the author of that loving relationship between people that we know as the Christian way of life. So, Ms. Thompson, if you're still out there today, we're honoring you, and I thought you ought to be the first to know.
There have always been Ms. Thompsons as teachers out there. I can think of one in my life, and I suppose we're really honoring all of them who
and
care that much.
What an impact they have on your life, Mike. Yeah. You know, you never get away from that. You spend a whole year, a critical year of childhood, with a teacher like that, and the impact that a Ms. Thompson makes goes on, just as we heard in that final illustration by Rich DeVos.
We're going to hear about another teacher. I said at the beginning of the broadcast that we have two ingredients in today's program, and the second is going to be read by a great communicator, yourself.
Mike, there is a linkage between these two parts of the program, because we're going to hear a story about a Miss Owens, but she really is very much like Miss Thompson, and they could be one and the same person. What I want to do with what's left of our program is read a short piece. It's actually a letter from a father to his son, and it's part of a book that's just full of similar readings. The name of the book is Letters to My Children, A Father Passes On His Values. And I tell you, Mike, this is my kind of stuff right here. I could have written this. I didn't write it. I just read it, and I'm about to share it. But it's my kind of stuff.
It's called What Price Popularity, and the author has written it to his son, Matthew.
And it begins, Dear Matthew, there are ways to be a friend to someone without being a bosom buddy. Even an occasional act of kindness can change the way a person feels about life. I'm thinking of Mary, a girl who was in my class once. But let me tell you the story. When I was in the sixth grade, I was an all-American. I was smart, athletic, witty, handsome, especially with a Vaseline wave of hair sweeping back from my forehead, and incredibly nice. Things went downhill fast in junior high, but for this one year, at least, I had everything. Unfortunately, I also had Miss Owens for an assistant teacher. Miss Owens was a college girl who was practicing on us. She helped Mr. Jenkins, our teacher. Miss Owens also went to my church, and she knew that even though I was smart and incredibly nice, there was a thing or two I could still work on. One of the things you were expected to do in grade school was learn to dance. Now, my parents may have had some reservations at first, but since this was square dancing, it was okay. Every time we went to work on our dancing, we did this terrible thing. I mean it when I say it was terrible. I hope this kind of thing isn't done anymore. The boys would all line up at the door of our classroom. Then, one at a time, each boy would pick a girl to be his partner. The girls all sat on their desks. As they were chosen, they left their desks and joined the snot-nosed kid who had honored them with his favor. Believe me, the boys did not like doing this. At least I didn't. But think about being one of those girls. Think about waiting to get picked. Think about seeing who was going to get picked before you. Think about worrying that you'd get picked by someone you couldn't stand. Think about worrying whether you were going to get picked at all. Think if you were Mary. Mary was a girl who sat up near the front on the right-hand side. She wasn't pretty. She wasn't real smart. She wasn't witty. She was nice, but that wasn't enough in those days. And Mary certainly wasn't athletic. In fact, she'd had polio or something when she was small. One of her arms was drawn up, and she had a bad leg. And to finish it off, she was kind of fat. Here's where Miss Owens comes in. Miss Owens took me aside one day and said, "Dan, next time we have square dancing, I want you to choose Mary." She may as well have told me to fly to Mars. It was an idea that was so new and inconceivable that I could barely hold it in my head. "You mean pick someone other than the best, the prettiest, most popular, when my turn came?" That seemed like breaking a law of nature or something. It was like purposely trading a Mickey Mantle card for an Andy Pofko. Who wants Pofko when you can have Mantle? Who would pick Mary when there was Linda and Shelley or even Doreen? And then Miss Owens did a really rotten thing. She told me it was what a Christian should do. Now, I knew immediately I was doomed. I was doomed because I knew that she was right. It was exactly the kind of thing Jesus would have done. The day came when we were to square dance again. Mr. Jenkins told Miss Owens to go up to the cafeteria to set up. Then he lined up the boys by the door. It was worse than you think. If God really loved me, I thought, he would make me last. Then picking Mary will cause no stir. I will have done the right thing, and it won't have cost me anything. Well, you can guess where I was instead. For whatever reason, Mr. Jenkins made me first in line. Had Miss Owens been talking to him? There I was, first in line, my heart pounding, and now I knew how some of the girls must have felt. The faces of the girls were turned toward me, some smiling. I looked at Mary, and I saw that she was only half turned to the back of the room, her face staring down at her desk. Mr. Jenkins said, "Okay, Dan, choose your partner." I remember feeling very far away, and I heard my voice say, "I choose Mary." Never has reluctant virtue been so rewarded. I still see her face undimmed in my memory. She lifted her head, and on her face, reddened with pleasure and surprise and embarrassment, all at once, was the most genuine look of delight and even pride that I've ever seen, before or since. It was so pure that I had to look away because I knew I didn't deserve it. Mary came and took my arm, as we had been instructed, and she walked beside me, bad leg and all, just like a princess. When we walked into the cafeteria, Miss Owens was already thumping out a march on the piano. She looked over at Mary and me coming in at the head of the line, and she smiled real big, but with no surprise at all, like she knew all along. Linda and Shelley came up to me later, and in a catty kind of way said, "Miss Owens made you do that, didn't she?" I said no, and I wasn't lying. Miss Owens didn't make me do it. She had asked me to do it. She had told me I should. But I had chosen Mary, and I was glad. Mary is my age now. I never saw her after that year. I don't know what her life's been like or what she's been doing, but I'd like to think she has a fond memory of at least one day in sixth grade. I know I do. Love, Papa.
What an incredible message from a father to his son.
Isn't that beautiful, Mike?
The value taught there. I think every listener can identify with that story. We're either Mary or we're Matthew or we're the teacher. We're in there somewhere.
I've been all three at various times of my life, Mike. We're out of time. Again, we dedicate this program to Miss Thompson, Miss Owens, and indeed, let's dedicate it to Mary, too. She's out there somewhere, I would think. And, Mike, I'll bet she does remember that day in the sixth grade.
Yeah, how could she forget? What an encouraging program here on Focus on the Family. Thanks again to Rich DeVos for his message and also for this story by Daniel Taylor. The title of his book, again, is Letters to My Children. You might want to look for it in your local library or your bookstore. And the book that we referenced by Rich DeVos at the beginning of the broadcast was Compassionate Capitalism, and I'm sure that's available as well. This program was provided by Focus on the Family. Today's producer was Lisa Cadman. Audio engineering and production were handled by Keith Valenzuela and Pete Stokey. Our executive producer is Bobby Valentine. Our host has been psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout. Looking forward to having you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.